We just literally were, it's, and we are live. Probably one of the most prominent, our guest tonight is one of the most prominent men's rights activists in Australia, Adrian Johnson. Welcome aboard.
Good day.
Yes, the, we usually cover recent topics here, but you'd like to introduce yourself and give yourself the Reader's Digest version of what you've done and how you've, how you became the person that you are currently.
Okay. Short story is about 4 or 5 years ago now, I got really into the men's rights movement. I stumbled onto A Voice for Men, which is an American website. Actually, probably a bit longer than that now. And there were people who, well, actually, there was just one person whose name was Tom Voltz, who wanted to start a meeting up in Sydney. And so, you know, I just sort of, okay, why the hell not? Well, we met up there. And so then we just, you know, next step was let's make some posters. And posters we made were sort of like basic stuff. Like, for example, there were posters in Sydney that said stop violence against women. So we made our own posters that said stop violence against everyone. And of course, those posters were enough to receive for us to receive dozens of death threats in poster form, by the way. Like, they put posters up threatening to kill us. And one was actually no more than 25 meters away from where our official meeting point was. Like, we meet once a month and we advertised it publicly where we were going to be. Mm-hmm. And so one was not very far away from where we were actually meeting. And so that was fun.
And oh, yeah. So you guys used to have you actually had a meetup, and you had a regular meeting place posted up at meetup. Well, that was you guys, wasn't it?
We still do. We have a meetup page called Equality for Men. I think it's called Equality for Men Sydney off the top of my head. But basically, that's the meetup page, and we use the meetup app to schedule when our next meetup is going to be. And we in Sydney are lucky enough to do it publicly. Melbourne is not lucky in that way at all. They cannot do it publicly.
I believe that's was the place where Cassie J really got, rather they tried to give Cassie J the rails when she was down there promoting her Red Pill movie.
Oh, was that was Melbourne. Yes. I was my good friend David Williams was still is actually in charge of Men's Rights Melbourne, and he did the Australian premiere of the Red Pill. Now, just to give you an idea of the craziness that it was, our venue cancelled on us within a couple of days of it going ahead, and we had to find a new venue. And not only did we have to find a new venue, but we had to start a crowdfunding service thing, and that was partially to pay for the new venue and partly to pay for security. There was about, if memory serves me correctly, there was about $5,000 that we had to pay in security services, that where we got very professional people to secure the area, and we actually did not post the actual location until the last minute. We gave a general location, like meet at this particular station in Melbourne, and there will be somebody there. And I went to that station and I walked people to the location. In fact, even after it got texted out, I don't even know now if I'm allowed to tell you what the location is. So that's how extreme it was. That's how much of a threatening situation that it was. And it's similar things repeated when the Honey Badgers attempted to meet in Melbourne. So much stuff happened at that point down there that I'm actually not even allowed to tell anybody what happened. That's how big it was. And wow. Still,
well,
is.
I can, I can, I, my job. I won't tell you what my job is because, I mean, there might be people on here who will try to dox me to find out where it is. But when I was working on Saturday, I actually ran into Karen Strutt at my workplace.
Yeah.
Get an update on what was happening specifically with the lawsuit against the Calgary Expo. It is still ongoing. Karen Strong asked me to leave the details out. It looks positive,
yeah,
for them. They are probably going to have to go back to court though.
No. Okay. I have to intervene here. So this is the Honey Badger intervention with the Calgary Comic Con. Am I right?
Yep, that was the event. Yeah, that was the event in Calgary. That was the one that was the last time I actually physically saw you. I was, when you actually ran into me, came to visit me that night, I was just leaving their location where they had rented a house.
Okay, Adrian, I'd like to lay some groundwork here. Is that Naroki and I have known each other for, what, 20 years now?
Close to it. 1995? Mm-hmm.
Getting close enough.
And you're working together in a certain resort town in the Rockies that's fairly well known.
With Canadians and Aussies and Kiwis and Japanese and everything else. Yeah, exactly.
Adrian, yeah, we got a good Aussie joke from those days. Four guys get on a ski lift. An Aussie, a German, a Frenchman, and a Canadian. A Frenchman takes out a bottle of wine, takes a sip, throws it over, says, "We'll get one when we get to the top." German pulls out a bottle of schnapps, throws it over, says, "We'll get another one when we get to the top." Canadian looks at the Australian, boots the Australian off the ski lift. The other two look at him like he's crazy, and he goes, "Well, we'll just get another Australian when we get to the top." There's a lot of Australians in the town that Steve and I work together at.
I see.
Okay. You've got to keep my name up.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yep.
Exactly. No, not even that. Anyway. So I'm seeing the Zanzibar in Newtown. Is that you, Adrian?
We used to meet there. I'm sure they're a picture of when we did meet there, probably still on the meetup, but that's not where we're meeting currently.
Okay, that's fine. I don't need to know that, but I just want to make sure that what I'm seeing here in front of me is basically you and your organization. Okay, fair enough. We'll leave it at that. So let's move on, gentlemen.
All right. Well, first of all, Adrian, your experience. Oh, by the way, I go by Naroki. He goes by Rearson on here. You know what my real name is, but yeah, I go by Naroki on here. Nick Redding from Men's Rights Edmonton used to live half a block away from where I lived, and I was. Yeah, your experience with the Flyers was very similar to the experience that he had. I think it was 2013 when he posted up those flyers, and he was telling me some stories about what happened to him. It was one time he was posting one of them down, I think it was an Oriental guy, just started following him around and started screaming at him for about 20-30 minutes before he finally left.
I've made it a point generally to not poster alone by myself. I always have somebody else with me. Generally, we try to audio record or some kind of record it at the event. But we have had people like yell at us from the car or try to start some kind of argument whilst in a car while stopped at a traffic light. And so they have to move when the light goes green, because otherwise the guys behind them, start tooting. And so I haven't had actually that kind of problems. I have had weird experiences whilst postering. I've had posters disappear. I've had but like I've started a poster run at a certain place and I've come back to that place and by the time I've gotten back there, it's already gone. So I've had that.
Awesome.
And I've also had really weird experiences that I can only assume only happened in Newtown because they don't happen anywhere else in Australia that I know of.
Well, here's the thing about Australia and Canada and Sweden. It's kind of, I've noted this. It's always the countries that have, well, I mean, my version, my idea of Australia is based upon.
Well, here's the thing about Australia and Canada and Sweden. It's kind of, I've noted this. It's all.
Hold on a second. I'm trying to give you. I'm trying to send you the link here, Adrian.
I have found it.
Oh, okay. Now, you know, but yes, for instance, Sweden is noted for its tolerance. Canada is noted for being the nice guys. And Australia is always just, and I've seen this from prison. They seem to be kind of a laid back type of culture. And like,
oh, yeah.
In particular, where feminism has really, where a lot of insanity seems to have really taken hold.
Yeah. Well, it's taken hold in a lot of places outside of our free countries. I mean, it seems to have taken hold mostly throughout the Western world, throughout the civilized world, where we've run out of a certain amount of other problems. Like, sure, there is, you know, there is an amount of racism and other discrimination that exists in the Western world. I wouldn't deny that, but it's certainly not as bad as it once was, and it's certainly not as bad as it exists in other countries. And so I think what we have here is we have a large group of people who don't know what to do with themselves, who define themselves largely by that they must have an enemy to slaughter at all times. And, you know, whoever that enemy is, it doesn't matter. And so the narrative just keeps on changing. As far as I can see, feminist narrative just exists to keep changing, to give people an enemy to fight.
Well, that makes sense. You know, if you don't have an external enemy, you're going to have an internal enemy. We didn't have, like, specifically in North America back during the Cold, because I grew up during the Cold War. You know, feminism didn't have this big of a hold. It wasn't nearly, I mean, there were the misandrists and that sort of thing, but there was not nearly the same amount of attention given to it as is now by a long shot.
Oh, no. I mean, we have entire organizations in Australia, government-funded organizations, whose sole purpose is to just shove feminist propaganda down the throats of our citizenship and other sorts of really negative things as well. We have organizations like White Ribbon. I don't know if you've heard of White Ribbon.
Yeah, but I have. I was actually going to ask you about White Ribbon.
Oh, well, what do you want, White Ribbon?
Well, let's just give the Reader's Digest version. I was not. It was them that tried to host International Men's Day event back in November. They were one of the people who tried to sneak that past everybody, too, weren't they?
I don't know. I doubt that, actually. They were probably too busy doing white ribbon events around that time because November 24, 25 is, I think it's 25 that is White Ribbon Day in Australia, and white ribbon day is a day that we spend the entire day basically talking about violence against women. Now, of course, the subtext of that is, you know, domestic violence against women, and we can't talk about violence against men or violence against any other group. It just has to be against women. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what the entire day is about, dedicated to.
So when it comes to domestic abuse, do you guys have the Duluth model as prevalent down there as we do here in North America?
I am unaware of if we have a the Duluth model or not. If we do, it's not directly like it's not directly written anywhere that I know of, but we probably do follow in its spirit, at least, even if we don't follow it word by word. But yeah, a big thing that we have here is we have organizations like White Ribbon who, you know, let's just, you know, be honest and call it for what it is. As far as I'm concerned, White Ribbon exists for the sole purpose of stopping male victims or female perpetrators from reporting. We know, you know, feminists have told us for decades that genderizing words can stop people from coming forward. That's why we're not allowed to say firemen anymore, policemen anymore. We have to use gender-neutral terms now. And the reason why we use gender-neutral terms is because there is a concern that it will stop women from becoming fighters or stop women from becoming firemen. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that genderizing domestic violence is stopping male victims from reporting their abuse. And, you know, as far as I can tell, that is the sole reason for the existence of White Ribbon, because if more men reported, that would do a big number to the feminist narrative in Australia and everywhere else.
Wow, because that's like really interesting, because you were talking about how they dominate the narrative. I, job that I had before the one I currently have, there was something that I got told about. It was called the ACE score. I can't remember what ACE means, but there's a series of 10 questions answer. And if you score over, say, if you score three or between three and four, you, minus a couple, if you score five or higher, you end up different. You're definitely going to end up in trouble at some point. I came out four, by the way. But here's the thing about the test itself. One of the questions, and I noticed this when I took the test, was your mother physically, mentally, emotionally, or abused in some way? Or your brother or sister, the father is like completely left off the questionnaire at all.
Of course.
You know, and it's you know, it just, yeah, the prevalence of the Duluth model and everything, and it's sort of like, you know, I don't even want to get that. I mean, we could do an entire hangout just on the ACE score system and what it means, but we're not. We actually, what we do here on this nation is we pick. We got four topics tonight that we want to get into. So we decided doing. I decided to do an interview with you first, but Ryerson here wanted to do a wanted to talk about the hijab hoax. Canada. Our prime minister actually got involved in this. Nobody in his office even bothered to fact check or get back to the Toronto police about the investigation. He just went on national television and declared it a national and international outrage. And then it turned out to be a completely faked and manufactured incident. So Ryerson, take it away.
Oh God, don't fucking get me started. All right, fine. excuse me. Adrian, thank you for joining us. Well, what else can I say about Justin except that if it doesn't affect his desired voter base, he's not going to say a goddamn thing. And at the end of the day, when it comes down to my vote, he's not going to get it. The Liberals federally won't get it. I might vote Liberal on a provincial scale, but I'm going to leave it at that. But our beta male, soy boy, feminist, I could go on here, but I'm going to leave it at that. He knows what he's doing, and he's trying to basically whip up support for, well, Bill M103, which is to define in the broadest possible terms what Islamophobia is, or maybe specifically what it isn't. So to me, because he never retracted whatever else he had to say or feel, or if he actually has a thought about this, for the hijab attack, which was deemed by the Toronto police. Have we heard him actually retract anything? No.
I haven't.
No.
I haven't.
And he won't, because he knows that he's going to be called out for bullshit. And I'm going to use rather harsh words, and I don't care anymore, because much like... much like the POTUS south of the 49th border, I'm basically in the same boat. I don't care anymore, because it's political correctness that has killed Western society. It's political correctness that will continue to kill Western society as well. But in terms of this hijab, whatever the... that Muslim veil, that this girl, my issue is that I don't know if she understands enough of what she's been indoctrinated into, or what she will be indoctrinated into. Does she understand the long-term implications of a, relatively speaking, an equal, free society that I want Canada to be? Or are we going to follow fucking marionettes on strings like Trudeau is at best, because he's an awful speaker? And I looked this up on YouTube. You might look into it as well for both of you. The body language of his wife is that every time he speaks in public, when she was sitting in the Oval Office with Trump, her husband was talking about a couple of things, and she looked kind of bored. Now, the guy that was basically interpreting this, and he admitted that, look, I'm an amateur. But every time that her husband spoke up, she was bored. She's probably heard all of this shit time and time and time again. Trump starts to talk up. All of a sudden, she's a little more engaged. So her body language was screaming, I like this guy better than this bastard I've married. So I'm not sure. But my concern at the end of the day with all of this is that this will bring Canada down towards the path of Islamic fundamentalism. I can't say it any other way that's going to be nice, so I'm just going to say it for what it is. Do I want to see this happen? No. Do I think that we have a relatively functional society? Yeah, I do. Is it perfect? No. No society ever will be, and I accept that fact. But in terms of what happened with this fake scissor knife slash attack, whatever the case may be, I'm worried that this will accelerate the decline of Canada. And if it happens, well, you know what? I can't stop it, because I'm not a devious enough asshole to think about how to bring down a society where I'm living that I want to be a willing and a happy participant in. So I can't say that any other way than that.
I would like to add something, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Don't know a lot about Canadian politics, I admit. And so perhaps this is something where I may be a little bit ignorant about. But as far as I can, I actually have watched like a couple of like more conservative style videos about it. I watched a couple of videos from Rebel Media, for example. I believe they're mainly Canadian
Yeah, they are.
They are, yes.
Media group. And it seemed to me that a lot of people were calling this out as the fact that it was. Similar things have happened in Australia, by the way. There was a guy, I think he was Lebanese a couple of years ago, who basically graffitied his own shop, destroyed his own shop, got insurance money from it, and put like "fuck the Lebs" or something all over it.
Yeah.
And basically tried to have it as a some kind of hate crime sort of thing, and it was all discovered. And so I wouldn't say that what happened with the girl is as serious as what he did, because she is. I'd like to think that she is innocent. I like, she's just an innocent kid who, you know, kids, they go for a phase where they like to lie to get attention. And she certainly succeeded in that venture. I hope that the moral people take from that is, you know, maybe it's not the best idea to believe young kids without evidence. I mean, I'd hoped people had believed this, had found this out before. Like, there's this thing in America called the Satanic Panic, where it involved a lot of young kids accusing people who were taking care of them of witchcraft and all sorts of crazy things. But it seems that we never learn the lesson, it seems. And that's kind of sad.
Yes, I remember that daycare. Those charges turned out to be completely false, but lives were destroyed over that. That was like the 80s.
And to me, like, in this particular instance, I think the fact that she's Islamic has very little to do with it. I would actually think that it's just to do with her age and that she's looking for attention and she's going through that phase that a lot of kids go through. And I'm sure there are other things that have happened in Canada and in other places that have plenty to do with Islam, but I wouldn't chalk that particular event necessarily up to that, in my opinion.
Okay.
I would chalk up the response to it. I would chalk up the Prime Minister's response to it as the result of it being related, I think, but not the original event.
Well, for me, where it stands, it looks like he was politically using him. He was looking for an event to politically grandstand, and he picked one, and they didn't bother to fact check. I saw that the kid gave. Mm-hmm. It looked, because I've had to deal with people that have had to deal with immediate shock and trauma. I'm not a police officer, but I have to deal with it every once in a while. Like, if somebody comes at you with a weapon, I mean, you're freaking scared. I mean, like, even if you know what to do, you're still scared.
It's fight or flight.
And you're still shaking and so forth after the fact.
Yeah.
And the kid was talking as though it almost sounded rehearsed. You know, okay, so there's a possibility that the kid up to it, but we'll never know. This story is just going to disappear into the ether. Reach a point, though, and this is something I've told Muslims here in Edmonton, it's just going to be same thing with feminists. It's just going to reach the point where you're just going to hit critical mass. It's not going to matter whether you're that type of Muslim. Like, everybody is going to pay the price, and that includes like people like, and I pointed this out to people who say Muslims are all the same. Well, Indians that fled Iran during the reign of the Ayatollah, mm-hmm. really fundamentalists, they were very secular. Same thing with the Lebanese that live in the Midwest of the United States. They're not particularly fundamentalist either. You know, so there are groups that left that were legitimate refugees. But it's not going to matter if it hits critical mass. Like, everybody's going to pay the price.
Well, I remember reading about, how can I say this politely, about the weaponization of Islam. And I hate to say this, but I see it happening now. And I don't want to say it's going to happen, but I know it will. Because I've worked with quite a number of women. Actually, I have to relate to both of you and whoever else is going to listen to this. Excuse me. There was a woman that I worked with, and I worked eventually kind of worked for, and she's from Libya. Libya, as in Gaddafi. And I recall one day that she was off. And I asked her about it. And I, you know, and for those of you that don't know me, if I'm asking you, how are you doing? I'm legitimately asking, how are you doing? So I'm not trying to sound cordial or, yeah, thanks, goodbye, you know, that sort of thing. I hate those kind of people, and I don't want to be that kind of a person. But I asked Tina, that's the name she went by, what's going on? And, you know, we started talking, and she mentioned about Gaddafi and this and the other thing. And I will admit, at the time, that I was relatively ignorant. And she told me that what, you know, what he did to raise his country up. And then I looked into it, and I went, holy shit. Well, yeah, she's right. She doesn't want ISIS or an Islamic State to come to Canada because she, as a woman, and I fully support her as an equal individual for potential to want to achieve whatever it is that she wants in her life. I fully support that. Gender equality in the truest sense. And I think the two of you can agree with me on that. Am I right?
Equal opportunity of opportunity? Absolutely. Outcome? Absolutely not. But opportunity? Absolutely.
Yeah. And equal under the law.
Exactly. A secular law. Am I right?
Yes. Secular law.
Okay.
Hopefully.
I don't think we're going to have any choice in this matter, but we'll leave it at that. But for me, it boils down to is that whatever comes out of the court system in the Commonwealth, whether it's Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, South Africa, wherever, I don't care. As long as the law is being applied theoretically equally to both sexes at all times, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, I don't care, whatever it may be. Doesn't matter. But what she said to me is that, and I found this really strange, because she did wear she's Muslim, and she did wear the handkerchief, scarf, whatever, around her head.
Hijab.
Whatever. I'm going to leave it at that. She wore that. But I always treated her as an equal because I didn't want to see her as a Muslim woman or a Christian woman or a Jewish woman, whatever. I wanted to look at her and I wanted to deal with her as a person. And I've always felt that way. And there's a couple of people at my current workplace that I don't want to look at in the same manner, but I do. I'm kind of going, I'm going to shut up and just leave these people alone. But Tina, her husband ended up moving into Jordan as a refugee, and she eventually left Canada to go be with him. And I hope that they're safe. I really honestly do. And I have the utmost respect for her as a person, as a woman, not as a Muslim, but as a human being. But what she told me is that basically at the end of the day, it's not important to her what the religion that she will follow in her country is. What she wants to do is, as a person, specifically as a woman, is that she doesn't want to be controlled by her husband, which I have to agree with. And when she told me what Gaddafi was doing for his country, for his people, and then I looked into it, and I actually did, heaven forbid, some research into it, I went, oh my God. Yeah, he was a bit of an asshole, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But he was standing up for his country. Now, I can respect that. I can respect that from him. So I'm okay with that. So now that's basically, that's all I have to say. As for the Canadian Prime Minister, he's virtue signaling everything possible that you could ever want. If I was a Muslim or a newly converted Muslim, again, I don't have a problem with the religion per se. They have to go through their own reformation, which I think is a topic of discussion we'll have to address sooner or later.
Oh, Muslim reformation would be a topic, would be virtually an episode onto itself.
They have to go through that, much like the Catholic Church broke into the Catholic and the Protestant movements. And then there's the Orthodox as well. But Muslim or Islam, whatever, they have to go through their own reformation. And it's not going to be pretty.
It just won't. You know, here's my take on it. And it's, I don't know how... Mm-hmm. I take it as a different group of Muslims that have come. It's mostly Indonesians in Australia, is it not, Adrian?
Oh, shit. Sorry.
I beg your pardon?
It's mostly Indonesian Muslims in Australia, isn't it? And a few people from Malaysia, for the most part. Maybe some people from India.
We do have quite a lot of Indians in Australia. I don't know what they practice, to be honest with you. A few Indians that I have met in my life tend to be Hindu. I honestly don't know the demographics of the religious people entering the country, actually, off the top of my head. I really don't.
Well, it's about 1.5 million Muslims in Canada, which makes them slightly under 3% of the population here, which is a significant, almost double what it was 5 or 6 years ago. Here's the thing which I really prize about the West, and it's something that I think the West could possibly contribute to the Islamic problem. Western democratic values. If we're able to take the fundamentalist elements out of these immigrants that are coming over, get them out and give the Muslims, like the more secular and the less fundamentalist Muslims, the space they need to create something that's not controlled by fanatics, they have the possibility of getting the reformation done in Islam that probably isn't likely going to happen in the Middle East at this point. Because, I mean, the Arab Spring, and everybody talks about the Arab Spring. The one thing that stands out to me about the Arab Spring, and we're kind of getting off topic here, so we're going to have to get back on it, but all of the countries that got overthrown during the Arab Spring were all secular. Saudi Arabia wasn't touched. Yemen wasn't touched. None of the countries that were theocracies were touched with that Arab Spring. They were all secular. Rule by law, not rule by Sharia law, that all got overthrown. And that includes Syria right now. And that's my take on it. And I think, unless Adrian has something else to add, I think we need to move on to Aziz Ansari. Adrian, you have anything else to add?
No, not about this topic.
Okay, so we are going to move on to Aziz Ansari, the guy who potentially may have put the wooden stake into the heart of the Me Too movement. Okay, I've done some research on Aziz Ansari. He's one of those, and I know because I've worked in the film industry before. He's one of those performers, and I've run into a few of them. I won't name names, but apparently he's one of those performers. If you couldn't do anything for him, he couldn't be bothered to have anything to do with you. You know, very two-faced, real slimy. Well, not a very well. He was also one of those. He was one of those progressive males. But in this particular case, and this is something that happened with the Me Too movement here, feminists were laughing and saying, well, if you just follow the rules that we laid out, you won't get into trouble. Well, Aziz Ansari did follow those rules. And as a result, he still got into trouble. But also what's happened, though, and this is something that really stands out to me about Aziz Ansari and what's happened, is that French actresses spoke out against Me Too. Ashley Bamfield called out the writer of the article on Babe.com. So for one of the, and Tommy Lahren put Emily Linden's feet to the fire, but for the first time, I'm actually seeing women, non-feminist women, calling out the bullshit. That's something that stood out for me on this particular issue. And Aziz Ansari didn't do anything wrong. And I'm done.
Unfortunately, a lot of damage has already been done. I mean, nobody wanted to talk about many of these allegations critically when they first appeared. You look at Weinstein. What's his first name? Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Just the amount of allegations that happened about him. It's sort of it's kind of amazing, and it's kind of sad, because to me, a lot of these allegations, not just about him, but about a lot of these famous people, a lot of them seem to me like, okay, there's a possibility that they're not telling the truth, and maybe some of them aren't, you know, maybe some of these allegations are false, but let's just assume for the minute that these allegations are true. That's even worse, because that means in some aspects, in some way, a lot of these women seem to have been complicit for a very long time, seem to be happy for a very long time, not coming forward and allowing more people to be victimized. And I don't understand why that is being seen as brave or bravery. In my opinion, what would have been brave is this, you know, if, you know, something like this happened, then at the time immediately someone goes to the police in order to stop this from happening again, not wait 20 years and report about it on Twitter when there is no evidence anymore. There can be nothing other than opinions. There are no facts. There are only opinions now, because it's so long. And yeah, that's the sad thing about this whole thing, is that there are no facts anymore, because it's too far removed from the time that it took place. Many of the allegations took place.
Fair enough. I actually respect your opinion, and I can say for myself that basically, at the end of the day, if an actress wanted to get known, she had to pay the price, and she willingly paid the price. Do I agree with it? No. Is that the reality? Well, unfortunately, I think that is exactly it. Am I going to be terribly sympathetic with any other actress that comes forward with this Me Too hashtag movement, whatever else, or whatever it will splinter into? No. Because at the end of the day, for me, as a consumer, I can either choose to put up with the bullshit that Hollywood has continuously put out, and if you're not socialist, left-leaning, blue jackass, is it? I apologize for this, but correct me, Case, the Democrat mascot, is it a jackass or is it the other one?
Donkey.
Close enough, yeah. So they're basically as stubborn as all fucking hell. And if they choose to be that, that's fine. I don't really care. I mean, hell. And I've said to Naroki before, the last movie I saw in the theater was Deadpool. And I loved it. It's a...
That was really good movie.
It was. And it's a movie for guys to go there and to be men. We don't have to worry really about love. We don't have to worry about what our deeper emotions are. We don't have to worry about this, that, or the other thing. It was about being intellectual in an illogical environment. So basically, to me, whatever happens in Hollywood, you know what? Just like Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in Hollywood? Hey, you know what? You want to set yourself up to be bait to the predators? Go for it. Am I going to be sympathetic at the end of the day because you're not going to get the fat rat's ass about what's happening in my life? You know what? Go fuck yourself. I have no time for you, and I don't. So, you know, the Ashley Judds and everybody else that's out there protesting and their twisted, deluded morality, whatever the case may be, I don't care anymore because I don't. And as Naroki has heard from me say before, I'm not a media person. So, you know, celebrity couple A, B, C, D, E, F, or whatever, they're suddenly breaking up. So, if they're going to care about my life, I might care about their life. And I'll leave it at that. As above, so below.
Okay, well, my return on this is, first of all, the first person I actually looked at when Me Too first came out with Harvey Weinstein was Paul Elam's reaction to it. And one of the first things Paul Elam said on Year for Men was, how many of the women, given the number of accusations against Harvey Weinstein, how many women actually said yes?
Yeah, and that's probably what I'm asking is, how many of them were willing to jump into bed with this ugly, fat, pardon me for not being politically correct here, but this ugly, fat Jew?
Ron Jeremy without the penis.
Well, without the dickhead.
Hey, well, you know, if that's what you're into, there's no judgment here. I mean, I'm 2 out of 3 of those, so I can't judge.
Oh. Okay. Well, I will. I'll when I've shortly after. Hello, Grumpy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
You came in at just the right time. We just had a Ron Jeremy without the penis joke come up.
I hear that.
Yes. Well, again, because I do work in the film industry. When the accusations first came out, where did Adrian go?
Where'd Adrian go?
Oh, wait, he's back. Okay. I talked to a guy down who makes his living down in LA. And he was telling me of the 5 major studios down there, 3 heads had either quit or had been asked to quit within the first 2 or 3 weeks after Me Too. I've known this too, because I mean, I've run into it a few times where it was fairly obvious that some woman slept with somebody to get a part. You know, I mean, this is almost modus operandi. I mean, I read this, I listened to the Stefan Molyneux interview that he had with Tom Bresnahan specifically, and that one specifically tied into a movie called An Open Secret, which I would really suggest you guys take a look at, because that one actually hits kind of home with me. Rearson, you weren't actually in Banff when I found out about Dan, but I was just looking into getting into the film industry at that time, and somebody actually recommended Digital Entertainment Network as a place that I go or send a headshot to get into. And if you look at An Open Secret, basically it was a hive of pedophiles, and they came freakishly close to being the Netflix that exists now. Like, if they had been able to keep going for another couple of years, they would have been the Netflix. And another thing that Stefan Molyneux talked about on that is that, I mean, a lot of actors, and this is something that I had to deal with personally myself, a lot of the actors and a lot of the performers are trying to get the love that they never got when they were growing up. So they're getting it from the masses, so to speak. And
childhood celebrities that are missing the paternal affections that they needed as a growing individual.
Well, even actors in general. I mean, a lot of them, this is a fairly common issue with a lot of actors. A lot of them, I mean, Angela Jolie comes to mind right off the bat. I mean, her father's John Voight from Midnight Cowboy. Their relationship has always been very fractured and hostile. And like I say, I've encountered a lot, even on the male side, there's a lot of them that are trying to get the love from performing that they didn't get when they were growing up as kids. So yeah, I mean, specifically with An Open Secret and Dan, there were a lot of men taking advantage of emotionally needy boys and women that are willing to go that to get that approval that they didn't get when they were growing up.
Or the boys are going through whatever the parents are pushing them into going into, so the parents can basically reap the rewards.
Pretty much.
Okay, fair enough.
Pretty much, yes. So, I mean, you've got an environment that is just ripe for this type of thing to take place. And, I mean, Harvey Weinstein, and again, never met the guy. I don't think I'd want to meet the guy, but again, I work in the film industry, and I'm surprised sometimes at some of the people that I'm only one or two steps removed from, even here where I live in Edmonton. And some of the stories that I heard about Weinstein,
you're not surprised.
I only heard a couple of them, but it was like, yeah, that would probably be the polite way of saying it.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Now, I'm going to have to interject here, and I apologize, gentlemen, for monopolizing a little bit of time here. But as a father, and I have an 8-year-old son, he is incredibly needy. He wants my attention, he needs my attention, and he needs my approval. And I was no different to my dad, and I'm sure my dad was no different to my grandfather, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However far you want to go back. Now, if he wants to go into acting and whatnot, honestly, I will do my best to discourage him from pursuing that life, because it's not going to end well. Period. Doesn't matter where, doesn't matter what. And I don't want him to be taken advantage of. But I've also heard from enough people that Hollywood has been ripe with corruption, and the pedophilia and the whole bit, you know, Corey Feldman. And I'm sure there have been more than enough instances before that have been swept under the rug. Do I want him, do I want my son to be exposed to that? Fuck no. Hell no. If I didn't love my kid, if I had more of a love for money, yeah, I would throw him to the wolves. Do I get paid off enough? Sure. And would I take that money? Yeah, I would. But I'm not going to, because he needs me as a father to be there to support him. And in short, basically, whatever happens in Hollywood, as far as I'm concerned, fuck him. Fuck all of them. They're all Democrat leaning. I'm more of a Republican or Libertarian anyway. Out of necessity, not because I wanted to, but because I had to be. And I have no time for those. I don't want to be listening to that echo chamber every time I turn on the fucking television. Netflix is bad enough, don't get me wrong. They've got some pretty decent stuff. But if I sense a hint of social justice warrior, feminist, bashing the Republicans, you know what? As a consumer, I can shut you off, and I will. So that's my take on it.
Adrian.
Yep.
You're up. You have anything to say on this set topic?
Not really. I'm actually, yeah, I don't know much about it, so there's really not much I can add.
Grumpy? You there?
Yeah. How much of a journey do you want to go on?
Well, I don't have to be. I can stay up till 4 a.m. I don't know about Rearson, but I can stay up for quite a while. So, and we do have a couple other topics we got to talk about tonight, but, right. You know,
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Don't,
if you want
to, don't monopolize. Don't monopolize 2 hours, but if you need to go off on a long spiel.
I could take you on a little journey. Right. And I think I could keep it short, relatively. But let me tell you a story. And this is a story of two boys, 7th to 8th graders, who, you know, they lived in a little town, San Diego, which is a big town now. And they used to go to this club called the Westwood Club. And, you know, you could go there and you could swim and you could do things. And it was a community club. Right. So, you know, you lived in that community, you got to go to this community center. These two boys, you know, go in the locker room and would go into, but you couldn't go in, you know, under a certain age, you couldn't go into the sauna. And one day they approached the sauna, opened the door, looked in, there were two grown men in there, and they encouraged them to go in, right? And this is a true story, and it's going to go somewhere. These two gentlemen befriended these two boys. One of the boys kind of went off on his own thing. The other boy was attuned to the attention. There's relationships built for a number of years. The one boy that greeted this attention got, it turned out these one of the men were very active in the San Diego Theater Guild. Matter of fact, he ran it. We're talking 70s, mid 70s here. These two men took this boy under his their hook, I guess you would say. And he was involved in plays. And we're talking, you know, San Diego Theater Guild plays. they bought him new clothes, treated him well, gave him things that his family couldn't give him. He, as he grew, he did plays in San Francisco, was very involved in the, lived in Los Angeles, very involved in the theater community. These gentlemen, even, he was dying. These gentlemen even paid for his mother and him to go to New Orleans. And that young man died in my arms at the age of 26. He was groomed by these people who were involved in that industry. And that was my little brother in 1988, I want to say. March 11th, 1988. Now, at the time, right, when I was a younger man, I didn't have the knowledge or the kind of the awareness of the grooming, right? These men, when we were young, let's go back to Westwood Club, and they lived in a condominium. And, you know, one of them got naked and invited us to play with them sexually. But they also did other things, taught me music. I learned how to play the recorder, a number of musical instruments at the time. I wasn't really interested in, you know, at some point I realized something, this was bad, right? But, you know, there's a dichotomy to the story in that, you know, they gave my brother something, right, that gave him meaning or enriched his life, but they also groomed him. And he was one of the first victims of AIDS. So, you know, this is shit, you know, from my perspective. When I see what's coming out now, when we talk about Corey Feldman or we talk about all this other shit, you know, it was like in the 70s and 60s and 70s, it was like Candyland down there. And I wish I knew now what I knew then. But of course, you know, back then I was a kid. So that's kind of my contribution to this topic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of wandering away from Aziz Ansari here. I had a couple of pedophile encounters when I was a kid myself, but nothing came of it. There were some, when I first went into treatment back in the mid 80s, there was a anonymous back in the mid 80s in Vancouver, there was a substantial number of gay men in the program at that time. A couple of them showed interest in me. There were people, fortunately, in the program that ran interference and didn't allow them to take advantage of me. The thing I remember about AIDS and that thing was that seeing, because there were a lot of decent gay guys as well, and having to go to a lot of funerals over AIDS and HIV in the late 80s before I left Vancouver and headed out to the Rocky Mountains. That's the thing that stood out to me about the whole thing. And I mean, we pretty much know how they got it, but I mean, it was like, it didn't really matter. But yeah, it was, you know, the thing that stood out to me about, well, when I watched, have any of you guys actually seen In Open Secret, the documentary?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, it's on Vimeo. It got told to me a couple of times, and I didn't have the confidence then that I have now, and I didn't send anything. And I was one of those guys that kind of went from being looking like a kid to looking like somebody in his mid to late 20s, like in a couple of years. So I didn't have that classic blonde pretty boy look, and I'm actually quite grateful, although apparently that didn't stop a few people from trying though. But yeah, as much as I dislike Aziz Ansari, the consensus is that he did not do anything wrong. And Mundane Matt, the part, me and Rearson were talking about this last week. It seems like literally in the space of less than 2 weeks, a lot of the legitimacy of Me Too and Time's Up has like literally just been squandered. And getting back, specifically getting back to Me Too, one of the things me and Mirsten were talking about, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, was, I got into a huge argument on Facebook with a couple of people over the Oprah 2020 incident. And at one point I had to go in and I had to go, I Googled Oprah and Harvey Weinstein, and I didn't scroll down. I just looked at the initial photos that came up, and there were 18 of them. So I find it very ironic that the very thing that's getting guys into trouble is also getting, probably is the thing that's going to kill Oprah 2020 from ever taking off at the same time. And they've, again, Monday and Matt said they were like one false accusation away from the whole thing disintegrating, and it looks like they probably have it, because again, Aziz Ansari did not do anything wrong. Now, I don't know what you guys' opinion, well, Adrian, yes, you really don't, but I guess none of you guys have any other things to add about Aziz Ansari before I move on to the next topic.
No, I do. I agree 100%. I think that, there's a line that you draw where normal different interactions between men and women and as uncomfortable as they are one thing, and then actually sexual exploitation is a complete other. So I agree with you 100%. The Aziz Ansari thing is complete and utter BS, which frankly, in my opinion, I agree that it undermines the whole Me Too idea.
Well, it does for sure. it's like literally in the wake. I mean, again, I was talking with Bruce about this last week. It's like we're not even past Blue Monday, and they've almost completely lost all the ground that they've gained from Me Too in just a period of about 2 weeks. And of course, this gets me into my next point about people not just making wild accusations and not even bothering to check. Now Rearson, you haven't seen the Star Wars movie, have you? I have. Have you guys seen the Star Wars movie that came out?
I have, and I'm going to say something very controversial. I really liked it.
Oh my God.
That's it. You're gone. Get out of here.
I have not seen it. I keep standing up my date.
I have made a point to say that I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it, and I will be damned in hell before I will see it.
Okay, I saw it the second day it came out on a Saturday. Oh, it was better than 7. Which is not saying that 7 was absolutely atrocious.
Jar Jar, it's for the loss.
It was better than 7, which isn't saying much, because 7 was just bad. It relied too much on nostalgia. I mean, I was sitting in the theater watching 7, and as the old characters came up, there was cheers from the audience, but it was sort of like, that was it. It was just like nostalgia and a couple of scenes that were just basically a rerun of A New Hope with scenes stolen from some of the original 3 episodes.
Oh my God. I'm sorry, but I've been going back through YouTube and watching Razor Fist, and he has this rant about Star Wars, and he basically said, you will beg to have George Lucas come back. No, I made a point to basically say, you know what? Fuck Star Wars. The hell with all of it. Because I can't be bothered. And personally, I can't. Because when something's had its run, its time is done. It, it was great. It, it's the in Japanese, it's the Natsukashi. It's the nostalgia. Yeah, I remember when, you know that sort of thing. And that's what I look at Star Wars being. It's the Natsukashi movement or you know, the whole thing of being. And when Darth Mickey bought Star Wars, LucasArts, LucasFilms, okay, I'm gonna just be quiet for a little bit. Okay, continue.
Okay, all right, I'll fill in the space. My other YouTube channel, my first interview, I interviewed a woman who saw, she can't reveal anything, of course, but she saw the script for 9. She couldn't tell me anything that went on in that script. But the only thing she said to me is, it's Disney. And if you're in the film, if you work in the film industry, that's really all you got to say about it. It's Disney. And I was sort of like, oh, never mind. I already know what's going to happen. And again, we're kind of getting off on movie fandom here. They could have gone with the books. They could have gone with the Thrawn trilogy. And they had 30 years worth of movies there. And they decided to reinvent them.
The thing is, they really couldn't do it. Like, I don't think they could do a young Skywalker. Like, Mark Hamill just looks a bit too old to pull a young Skywalker off. And so I think they were limited with what they could do. Now, with those limitations, in my opinion, and again, this is going to be controversial, but I think it is almost as good as Return of the Jedi. I really enjoyed it. But I think the politics around it are horrible, and I think is what has killed it. I think the politics that has surrounded this movie has done a lot of damage to it, just as, and I sort of blame Ghostbusters for this. I sort of blame female Ghostbusters for ruining fucking everything. Like, female Ghostbusters is so bad, it's still ruining movies years after it's being made. That's how bad it was.
Well, okay, I had to bite the bullet because I'm the film guy. I had to go in and see Ghostbusters on the opening weekend.
Sorry.
It was, again, I didn't think it was that bad of a movie. If they had just, pardon my language, shut the fuck up and stopped virtue signaling about it and just marketed it as just another movie and not insulted the fans,
okay,
they probably could have broken even on it. It was an unremarkable movie, but it wasn't terrible.
Okay. My wife looked at the initial trailer and she said, basically, what the fuck is this? And she's from Japan. But I think Ghostbusters 2, and let's call it for that, or 2.0, whatever. Ghostbusters probably lacked the chemistry of the people that were putting the script together that ended up basically being more or less on the screen, that they didn't have behind the scenes translating to on-screen presence. Okay, don't get me wrong. Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, they worked together. Those three of them were relatively interlinked. Caddyshack comes up as an example. Saturday Night Live or whatever the case may be, Second City or SCTV. And that's what Hollywood doesn't understand, is that it can take years for people that are comedically inclined or comedic geniuses. And it may take months, half a year or two, whatever the case may be, before they can come up with a script that will actually work, that the audience can relate to. Hollywood's looking for a quick, fast, hard bang for their fuck.
That's pretty much right? That's pretty much what the lady I had on my other YouTube channel said. They're basically just going for the buck here. They don't really care about the story. And yeah, the whole film industry is there, but that's not really what this particular topic is about. Somebody made a very politically incorrect. They took out the girl power from the Star Wars movie and put it up at Pirate Bay.
The 45.
Now, 46 what minutes. Ended up happening with that is a whole bunch of SJWs and feminists went off to Triggered Land. And for some odd reason, or maybe not for some odd reason, they decided to blame MRAs for it. I took the liberty, articles on this issue, I took the liberty of challenging every single person in every article that posted up that, do you have any actual proof that it was an MRA? Or MRAs that made this social misogynistic edit of Star Wars. P.S. Everybody saying that it is isn't proof. And neither is the fact that there might be some people in the men's rights movement that say they like the show. And again, I was talking with Karen about that. And it's like I sent this tweet. It was probably about 15 to 18 people. Not one of them responded back with any type of a response on Twitter.
First point. Hashtag listen and believe. Why don't you listen to women, you misogynist? You absolutely hateful person. You have to always listen and believe 100% of the time. Don't you know that's how it works now?
Yeah.
Like, that's basically the narrative. If somebody says something, it might, you know, if a feminist says that this is the case, it must be true. You don't need evidence anymore. This is the world that we live in, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I did a blog on this called The Spaces in Between, which is basically they just say it and just hope you don't fact check. Grumpy, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I didn't hear a lot of chatter from the MRAs on that. You know, I mean, not to the credit that we're receiving, that's for sure.
Well, here's a question, Grumpy. Are we still, I mean, because I remember back in 2013, we were kind of in that Goldilocks zone where even negative publicity
was better
than made us stronger. I mean, are we still in that phase right now where even drawing negative attention for something like a misogynistic edit of Star Wars is actually making us stronger, not making us weaker?
I don't believe so. I think, you know, in respect to A Voice for Men and what Paul is trying to do and some of the others, I think they're, you know, we've kicked the door down. There's a lot of attention out there. And now we're trying to change the conversation a little bit and present more facts, just present facts, you know, where we're back. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, we were doing a little bit more door kicking where we had that idea that the negative attention is positive attention for that sake, right? That's not saying that may not be the case now. It's just saying that I think that at least on A Voice for Men's side, the conversation is changing and we're, you know, we've got enough people out there talking about things that we talked about 5 years ago that weren't talked about. So a lot of people have taken up a certain mantle and the, you know, that's good. And so, you know, kind of from the A Voice for Men or, you know, Paul's leadership there on that aspect of it, it's the conversation is changing a little bit where, you know, we're hitting more on the facts and more on like the personal development. And I think, for instance, Jordan Peterson is an example, is giving a particular message that resonates with men, even though some of the MRAs don't agree with the entirety of his message, it is still a broadening of our concerns, if you will.
That's funny because Jordan Peterson is actually the next topic, but getting back to this
particular. So you're saying you hate women?
Oh, yes. I disagree with Will. Well, actually, literally, I mean, Bruce saw the thread I had on my Facebook account. The woman of color literally at one point accused me of being a racist and a misogynist because I didn't think that open massive connection to Harvey Weinstein wasn't going to be problematic for her. And I basically had to tell her, it's like disagreeing with a woman doesn't make me a misogynist, although clearly it does. Yeah. And disagreeing with a black person doesn't make me a racist, especially right. me, because I'm not even white for crying out loud.
Hey, Adrian, I got a, you know, my wife and I celebrated our 29th anniversary. So just to alleviate all misconceptions, I am getting laid on a steady basis. I'm not a misogynist.
Okay, that was a reference. Okay, what I was saying, it was a reference to what happened with Jordan Peterson, where every time he tried to say something, the woman would be like, "So you're saying something completely different to what you've just said." And
well, I just wanted to clear up my part of it.
And you've been married for as long as I've been alive, so.
I gave birth to you.
Congratulations on getting laid. I'm MGTOW myself, although I'm also a MGTOW and an MRA. And here's the ironic part about me having gone MGTOW. One of the things that happened when I went MGTOW is that, I mean, I started working out and started focusing more on my career and my other things. And I actually get more female attention now that I've gone MGTOW than even when I was even my PUA phase in the mid 2000s. And I'm not the only MGTOW that's happened to.
Yeah. No, as you should, you're doing the right things. You know, obviously I'm a different generation. And so like the women were a little bit different in my generation, but as you should be taking care of yourself. And, you know, as Jordan Peterson says, you know, making yourself dangerous, you know, go out there and freaking, you know, if for instance, you know, someone comes along that lights your light up and kind of decides they want to jump on your train, you know, and you accept them, that's just gravy on the cake. But the primary focus has got to be you and your mission and the things that you want to accomplish in your life. And, you know, being great is when people want to jump on your train. Just my idea.
I have more women wanting to jump on my train now than I did. Well, mind you, it helps that I'm past some of the difficulties I've had to deal with in the past couple of years, but I've got more women wanting to jump on my train now than I did when I was 40, which is odd. But again, I've talked to other MGTOW about this particular issue, and it does happen to a lot of them. And it's, again, this is more
your age bracket as well. You know, when women, when they get to a certain age, they're a bit more, they feel a bit more sexual, apparently. And so you might be hitting that sort of age bracket, perhaps, where the women near your age are, you know, just going for something and just want a little bit of company, perhaps, as well.
Oh, Rearson appears to have fallen off. Maybe hopefully he'll come back. But yeah, since we've gotten into Jordan Peterson, he was the last topic that we were going to cover tonight. Saw the interview, saw Sargon of Akkad's review. I've seen multiple. Kathy Newman just absolutely got her ass owned. And of course, you know, yeah, no, Rearson had to leave his wife difficulties. He owned it, and it was like, and then Kathy Newman tried to claim harassment. And of course, because so many people have cried wolf over this topic, it was like literally they fact checked the living hell out of the, out of what she was claiming. And then somebody found the Google reference from one of her friends, where they're actually laughing and chuckling it up about supposed threats as the police are coming over to do an investigation on it. Sort of like fairly obvious that they were more or less just trying to pull that as a distraction from the fact that Kathy Newman got her ass handed to her.
Right. And let me add something here. I got this feather in my hand. When you look at Kathy Newman's early tweets, right? Someone responded to her about this interview, and she projected her hand. She projected her hand saying, well, just wait, right? Kind of indicating that there's more to come. And the more to come was precisely that whole tactic of diverting from the interview to victim status, in my opinion. I think this whole victim narrative that came out and, you know, we're going to hire investigators, I think that was a planned tactic on her part based on the early tweets that I saw from her.
I haven't gone over to her Twitter feed myself. There have been multiple people on YouTube that have done that basically, and this is something that I think is going to happen more and more. People are getting here's the counterpoint. Yeah, feminism in general and the SJWs are a lot more visible in the media than they have been in a while. Here's the ironic part about it. That's also a lot more visible to some of the ugliness and some of the lies that they've been. And I've been around since Donglegate, more or less. And I've seen so many times now where some feminist gets their ass handed to her and then tries to play the victim card. And so many other people are on to that type of a tactic now that it's sort of like, it's almost like an automatic that you start checking their Twitter feed after they lose.
Question. Right.
Because sorry, I interrupted you, Adrian. Go ahead again.
I just have a question. Like, I was under the impression that she wasn't even playing the victim card herself. It was being played on behalf of her by Channel 4. I wasn't aware that she herself was claiming victimhood. I was under the impression that her media company was claiming, that sort of thing on behalf of her.
Right. Well, what she did in response to it, she put out two tweets after all this went down, right? And like the first and second tweet that she put out, she basically indicated that there's more to come, right? So that tells me that she was involved in some kind of strategy when, because she was told, listen, you really screwed this up. And then she come back and said, well, just wait, kind of thing. So I don't think, obviously the channel might protect her a little bit, but she knew, in my opinion, she knew that there's going to be a counter strike based on her response in her tweets, a counter strike to this, to the blowback that she was getting.
Yep. So yeah, there was one person that Jordan Peterson actually got more threats. And of course, right, media currently being the way it is, nobody's checking, but it's sort of like
Jordan Peterson has to do is identify as a woman and the media would talk about it. It's the most obvious strategy in the world. We just won't do it.
Maybe I should do that someday, just identify as a woman. We actually, oddly enough,
I'm definitely thinking about it.
What is your girlfriend going to think about that, let alone your wife?
Here's an ironic thing. We had an incident here was it 2 years ago or was it a year and a half ago here in Edmonton where a bike shop had a woman's day. And some guy came in with a flat tire and he needed his bike repaired and they wouldn't do it because he was a man. Now, one of the guys here, it was still Men's Rights Edmonton at one point. He said, let's go in on, I really, really should have done it. Wednesday with a bike, and if they claim that we're not women, we'll just say we are women. I do check, and it was like in the Nick Redding said that I'd be the cameraman for that. I would be the cameraman for that, but we never got around to it. But it was sort of like it would have been worth the lols all by itself.
Yeah. Have you seen Karen Strawn's reply today to that?
Yeah, it was great.
She did very good.
Yeah, were you listening? I actually ran into Karen Strawn in person at work on Saturday when I was working.
Oh, did you?
A fairly lengthy conversation. Yes, I did. I was doing my job and she walked into the store that I was working at and ended up having a fairly lengthy conversation with her. I've got some ideas. I ran past her. Karen is more of a speaker. She's not an organizer, but I've got, depending upon what happens at Kilroy, and Kilroy looks like it's hanging on by a thread at this point. There's an issue going on specifically where it became fairly obvious based just simply on the fact of what happened with Milo early on in 2017, that the progressives all got together and basically came up with a battle plan, so to speak, and implemented it. It didn't go very well for them, but I mean, they did manage to take Hollywood, and it just, I mean, VidCon was kind of our hit back. And out of VidCon, Dave Cullen and Based Mom decided to hold that event holding that event in Phoenix, which is hanging on by a thread right now. But there, if that event doesn't go through, it's becoming fairly obvious to me that we're going to have to, not just MRAs, we're going to have to bring in like pretty much everybody and come up with some type of a coordinated strategy of our own. Which might be difficult because we, unlike the regressives that we're fighting against, we have a variety of theistic and political opinions on our side of the fence. And there's somebody at National Coalition for Me who's really good at organizing that stuff, and Karen Strong was recommending him, but I can't remember what the guy's name is. But he's good at organizing events.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm getting feedback here.
I'm not hearing anything on my end. You hearing anything, Adrian?
I did hear one echo, but now I'm not. Try say something again, Grumpy.
Yeah, I have. I do have some opinions on the whole Kilroy thing, but those can wait, I guess.
Yeah, that could be for another episode. I'm hoping to get the Kilroy just for the networking possibilities. We also covered Sargon of Akkad issue, Sargon of Akkad's idea of liberalism. And I think that name needs to be changed to something that's a little less politically loaded. Probably for another issue. That's probably for another episode.
Yeah. You have someone in your chat trying to get a hold of you.
I do.
You do. You got to pay attention to your chat there.
Okay, because it's not coming up anything. There's nothing coming up on my feed at all.
I don't see anything either.
Okay, it says Adrian doesn't have a girlfriend, just a gerbil. Yep, she did an awesome job. Anybody else here? TV is looking for attention. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the chat on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, he's talking about a separate chat.
Adrian, pay attention to TV.
What?
TV is.
I'm not reading the chat. I'm not reading the chat. I can't because otherwise it'll echo. That's probably what the echo was before.
Yeah, I got group chat. That's it, which is basically the people that are on the line here.
Yeah, what you'll need to do, what I discovered is, you know, set up your Google chat and then go back and open up your your YouTube homepage and then open up your chat, mute it so you're not echoing, and then you'll be able to see the chat on your YouTube.
Okay, homepage. I'll have to do that for next time.
Right.
So which bubble, which one that would be, chat, would it?
No, well, you just go to your YouTube homepage and then open up your live chat there. Mm-hmm. And so you have two windows. You'll have Google Hangouts and you have your YouTube homepage, and you'll open up, you know, your chat, because it'll show up in the
Feed. There it is. Yes, I can see it now. We do have a live chat.
You got four watching and they're talking to you.
Wow. Okay. Okay. I guess I'm gonna have to make the window smaller, because I had the chat window covering the entire
live chat. Right. They keep talking about Adrian's gerbil, so maybe they want
to
hear.
What have you done to that gerbil? What have you done to that gerbil, Adrian? Fess up.
I have what? Ay, ay, ay. This is yeah.
Well, first of all, the guy talking, he's a leftist commie bastard anyway.
Which one of us?
TV.
Okay. Well, that could be.
Okay. So we're going to have to, we've been on almost an hour and a half. And we've exhausted all the topics.
Right.
Do any of you guys have any parting comments before I wrap it up for tonight?
No, thank you for the chat. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I can be on again at some point.
Well, Rearson and I, it's usually Wednesday, sometimes it's Thursday, same time. We usually pick topics. Week, toxic masculinity is isolating boys, yet it's truly cringeworthy. Written by a woman trying to mansplain, trying to make boys wrong for being boys.
Yeah,
that will be one of the topics we'll be discussing, and the other topic we'll be discussing is the quartering. And the recent issue with one of the senior people, and you're going to love this, because this is very similar to Ghostbusters. One of the senior people at Dungeons & Dragons literally insulting his own audience and telling them to fuck off if they didn't support social justice. And those are the two topics that we've got so far for next week. And that's really it. It's been an interesting show. I call this one the False Accusation Show. I don't know what the theme is going to be for next week. I do these once a week. I have another YouTube channel which tends to be more locally and film related. I also do some coast to coast AM style content on that other channel, though I might also do it here. Need to keep them as separate as possible at this point, because again, I don't want to risk doxing and swatting at this point, especially after what I've been through the past few months. And I think I should probably, given the amount of time that it takes just to find guests for both of these shows, and the amount of time I'm having to put into it, I keep saying I'm going to get a maker support and a Patreon. I'm going to have to probably get those and put those up, because I do have a PayPal. If anybody wants to throw me some shekels there, I will put the link down on the low bar after this is done. Thank you very much for the guys who showed up. More or less the same time next week. It might be a little bit earlier. It might be a little bit later. But I'm going to try to do it on Wednesdays, I guess Thursday for you, Adrian, as often as I can.
Cool.
And that's it. That's it for tonight. Good show, guys. And I hopefully will see you around for the next one.
Sure thing.
You have a good night.